Mahakalapur. And we admit Lord Shiva. In fact, you know, I came across a reference yesterday that Shiva Loka, in fact, is on the other side of Mahakalapur. So, it's not exactly according to that, that Mahakalapur, or the Brahmajyoti, is synonymous with Shiva Loka. At least this is what it says. It's all a little esoteric, of course, but this is what it said. So they were passing through Mahakalapur. Lord Shiva and his associates were passing through, and Gopakumar met them and then went on with them. They were on their way to Kailash. He went on with them, and after a little while, they met some inhabitants of Vaikuntha. That was very amazing. Lord Shiva became completely beside himself in ecstasy. And Gopakumar, of course, he didn't know who these people were, but it was explained to him. And now, basically, Lord Shiva has handed Gopakumar over to the Vaikuntha-vasis. So now they're going to instruct Gopakumar. First of all, that he should render devotional service, even with the current body, even though devotional service is spiritual, and this body is material, but still, if you engage this body in those activities of devotional service, spiritual activities, then even though the body is material, but still the activity is spiritual, therefore it's spiritually beneficial. So, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha then, after some exchanges with Lord Shiva, they approached Gopakumar and said that we count you as one of the devotees, one of us. Not one of us, exactly, but one of the devotees, because if you recall, they had said that they descend from Vaikuntha, they enter the different universes of the different Brahmas in order to help the devotees and protect the devotees. So they told Gopakumar that you're one of the devotees. They told him that your guru is named Jayanta. That we hadn't heard until this point. He's from Mathura. And he is a type of incarnation of Krishna. He's some sort of empowered form of the Lord. That's a little mysterious, actually. But he's very special in that regard. And they have come for him. They are on a special mission to get him. So they understand. Well, they say, if you want to come to this Vaikuntha realm, then you should perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and act in terms of the nine processes. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishno, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. These are the nine processes of devotional service. And in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we perform these different activities in regulated ways, under rules and regulations, under the direction of authority, particularly the spiritual master and the scriptures and the senior devotees, like this. And they said, you should hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Particularly two things you should hear from Srimad Bhagavatam or focus on. You should hear about the descriptions of the practical execution of the process. That's one thing. And you should hear about the pastimes. And they say that actually any one of the nine processes can be sufficient anything other than the nine processes, anything outside those nine processes, is useless. But generally, the devotees, the advanced devotees, the great devotees, even though they may focus on one of the processes, but generally they like to do all of them. In Nectar of Devotion, it explains which great devotees have focused on which processes. Who focused on Shravanam? Maharaj Parikshit. And Kirtanam? Remembrance? Yes. And like this, there are nine great devotees who have particularly focused on different of those nine processes. So the inhabitants of Vaikuntha say that often it happens that great devotees will focus in on one of them, but on the whole they like to perform all of them. And anyway, they're making some good points, but if we listen carefully we'll see that there are also, just like the discussion about meditation, you know, there are some very good points there, but, you know, there's some things which we might not entirely agree with absolutely. And this is why, of course, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha are going to defeat some of those points. But now they're going to make some points about devotional service, which, you know, some are very good and some, there's good in them, but they may not be absolutely on the topmost level of understanding of the process. So they say that wherever devotional service is performed is as good as Vaikuntha, but still the great devotees prefer to be in Vaikuntha because the Lord is there. So that's nice, that's okay. But what does it indicate? What does it indicate to you? Mother Rati Manjari. That's it. Exactly. They are attached to Salokya Mukti. And they all are, including these ones here, who are instructing Gopikama. They're recognizing that all devotional service is absolute. So, therefore, it doesn't really matter whether you're in Vaikuntha, in heaven, in hell, or on this planet, or wherever you are. But still, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha prefer to be in Vaikuntha because the Lord is there. And, yeah. Like that. So then they emphasize how, even though these activities of devotional service are performed with the material body, at least when you're doing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and you're just practicing these nine processes, so even though this devotional service is performed with the material body, still, it is completely spiritual. And then they give a few reasons. Note these down. Because they have themselves seen liberated souls engage in those activities and advance. They're already liberated. They're already beyond anything to do with material activity, anything material. They're liberated souls, but they're engaged in those practices of devotional service and they advanced further. They saw that. So, of course, there are examples Shukadev Goswami, it's a classic example. The four Kumars can be considered examples. And there is, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the famous Atmarama verse, Atmaramas Chamunayo, Nir Granta Apyarukrame, Kuravantya Haitakim Bhaktim, Itam Bhuta Gunahari. That even all kinds of Atmaramas, self-realized or people who are satisfied in the self, all types of them engage in devotional service, even though they're self-satisfied, or in other words, liberated. But they become inspired to render devotional service to the Lord, because the Lord has transcendental qualities, and their experience while rendering devotional service is transcendental, and they advance further. And that verse is particularly referring to Shukadev, in fact. Okay, so then, a second reason. They say that these activities, these nine processes, the activities of devotional service, manifest spontaneously in the Satchit Ananda bodies of the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. They just feel impelled to render devotional service automatically. Of course, that's not Vaidhisadhana Bhakti, but it is Bhakti. It's the same nine activities, hearing, chanting, and remembering, but on the perfect level. So if they were material activities, then how could they manifest spontaneously in these residents of Vaikuntha? And then they say, we are evidence of this ourselves. A third point. That they of course are on their ways to the material world, different parts of the material world, to help the devotees in different ways. But they say that we travel everywhere. They're regularly doing like this. And they always remain completely untouched by the modes. In other words, they've done this before. This is not the first time that they are going into the material world to help the devotees. They've done it many times, but whenever they've done it, they've always remained independent of the modes. But then, their final point before they get into the subject or start focusing on the one main process which they're going to emphasize, the last point they make is that these devotional activities and even the neophyte, the new devotees' engagement in these devotional activities, it simply arises by the mercy of the Lord. That's all. But it would be a bit too much for the new devotees to digest this immediately. Therefore, Bhakti Devi makes it appear like we are responsible. This appears to be related to the point, important point, at the beginning of Madhurya Kadambani, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses where does bhakti come from. So it doesn't come from our karma. In other words, it doesn't just come from our material beings, our material bodies, minds, and the, you know, different conditions that our material bodies and minds are in. It's coming from Krishna, it's coming from Bhakti Devi, via the devotees. So it's an expression of mercy, in fact. But for the new devotees, the Vaikunthavasis say, it's a little difficult to grasp this point initially. So therefore, Bhakti Devi makes it appear like
we are more responsible for our engagement in devotional service than we really are. But the advanced devotees, they know that it's all just going on the basis of mercy, that's all. And they relish that. So, then the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they tell Gopakumar that you have to do this. You want to come to Vaikuntha, that place which is even beyond liberation. So you have to perform these nine processes. You have to perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. But, you know, you're not going to just do it here. You've got to go back to Vrindavan. That is the best place for it. If you simply practice pure devotional service, and particularly Nam Sankirtan in Vrindavan, with the aspiration to attain the Lord's lotus feet, then you'll gradually come to the level of prema and be able to enter Vaikuntha and see the Lord there, that Lord you are so hankering to see. So then they begin this discussion or little debate establishing how chanting is better than remembering. Now there's remembering and meditating. They make a distinction between the two, or at least in the sense that meditating is the highest level of remembering. To just simply remember, recall into one's brain, is not meditation. Meditation means to be totally absorbed to the exclusion of everything else in remembrance. So, note down a few of these points. It acts, the process of chanting acts on the sense of speech, the sense of hearing, and the mind. Remembering only involves the mind. Then chanting benefits the chanter and anyone else who happens to hear it. And the tongue is so powerful. Oh, the tongue is so powerful, it's amazing. Incredible. That if you can control the tongue, you can control your mind, and then you can remember nicely. So therefore, remembrance is a fruit of chanting. And therefore chanting is better. So those are three points about why chanting is better than remembering. Chanting engages speech, hearing, and the mind. Chanting engages three faculties: the tongue, the ear, and the mind. Remembering only involves the mind. So then they make a kind of esoteric point. It's an interesting point. That it is possible that meditation could be considered equal to chanting when the person is perfect. Because whatever process a perfect person performs is the best for him. Yeah. Then it doesn't really matter. And then they're all equal. Then the chanting is synonymous with remembering. And the remembering is synonymous with chanting. And for such a devotee, chanting will increase the bliss of meditation. Meditation will increase the bliss of chanting. So it doesn't really matter. On the perfect level, whatever the devotee does is best. It's all best. But still, on a more sort of down-to-earth level, or a level more like our level, Sankirtan is better on a broader level. Meditation and chanting could only be considered equal or something like that when the, or like remembering and chanting, when the remembering is on that very elevated level of meditation. But otherwise, Sankirtan gives bliss to everyone. It arouses prema very quickly. Others who hear become happy. And so on and so forth like this. Yes, okay. Then, final point they make to do with chanting. No. Chanting the Lord's names is the best and most powerful way to come to prema. And when you have come to prema through chanting, then your prema will inspire you to chant more, and your chanting will inspire more prema, and then you'll feel separation from the Lord and call out for the Lord, like the chatak bird calling out for rain clouds. Anyway, then he makes an interesting point, that when you chant, your reactions are reduced to nil. If non-devotees chant, their karma is reduced to nil, except for what they are currently experiencing. And if great devotees appear to be receiving karma, it is either because they want to cover their advanced position, or they want to teach people a lesson. Then he gives three examples. Bharat Maharaj wanted to teach the fault of bad association. Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to teach the fault of gambling. King Nrig wanted to show the danger of taking the property of Brahmins. Well, that's a very interesting analysis, particularly Bharat Maharaj, but anyway, that is what they say. So they tell Gopikumar that they will help him, and that as far as they can see, he is qualified to receive the Lord's full mercy, and the way they figured that out is because he refused to become a meditator on Tapaloka. Since that time, they have had this idea that he is qualified. So there they have addressed the point, or the idea, that the process of meditation, or remembering actually, the process of remembering is the best process. Now they're going to address the point of how do you see the Lord? What is the best way to see the Lord? Within the mind, or actually with your eyes? So they say that the Lord's body is spiritual and can only be seen with spiritual senses. But still, despite that, if you please the Lord through devotional service, then by His mercy, you can see Him. And if that is not possible, they say, then it would be impossible to see him through meditation also, because that's also dependent on his mercy. Then they give the example of Kardama Muni in the 21st chapter of the third canto. It is described how Kardama Muni meditated on the Lord for 10,000 years. And it was a wonderful experience. It must have been to have continued on for 10,000 years. But then he saw the Lord, and that was better. They also give the example of Prahlad. That's how he was remembering the Lord, but it was better when he saw the Lord. That's there also. Kardama, it seems to be clearer, at least from the description in Srimad Bhagavatam, how his experience when he saw the Lord, that was a higher experience for him than the experience he had when he was meditating on the Lord. So they say, well, Kardama, in fact, said, when he saw the Lord, he said that many yogis meditate on you for hundreds of lifetimes, many births, in order to see your form. So this is all stressing how seeing directly is better than seeing through meditation. Then the Vaikunthavasis say that meditation is good when you cannot see the Lord directly. But Sankirtan is good always. So Gopakumar should go to Vrindavan and chant. And suddenly, Gopakumar was there. This brings us to chapter 4. We've written a few headings on the board there. Well, first of all, he has some experiences in Vrindavan. He meets his guru again. Then he goes to Vaikuntha. Let us just briefly describe what happens when he's in Vrindavan. So he went back to Vrindavan, and what did he see? He saw it was more beautiful than any place he had seen so far. Now, if you recall, yesterday, as he was going through the coverings, he was seeing the coverings as being better and better and better. So much better than Brahmaloka. But now he's seeing Vrindavan better than that. So what does that mean? It means he's beginning to develop some transcendental eyes. Although he hasn't come absolutely to that point, but he's beginning to develop transcendental eyes. Well, he was already beginning yesterday, because he saw it as the same. But now he's seeing it even better than the same. You remember that? He saw yesterday, when he came back to Vrindavan from Brahmaloka, he saw the whole world had changed except Vrindavan was like how it had been before. It hadn't changed. So in other words, he was seeing through the whatever material superficial covering there was of Vrindavan like what we see. No, he probably didn't see the tempos or, you know, the rickshaws and so on. But now he sees it better. So that means spiritual advancement is there. It's coming more and more on the basis of his chanting. So he became so absorbed. This is not included here. This is just a little introduction before he goes to Vaikuntha. He became so absorbed, he forgot about going to Vaikuntha. He was wandering around, he went to Mathura, he met some Brahmins, and started hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from them, which just incidentally